Good morning. I'm Jeff Parker, appearing for Appellant Robert B. Gillum. At issue in this case is Mr. Gillum's standing to challenge a system of highway project evaluation criteria devised by the Alaska Department of Transportation to implement what four times it has admitted is its racially discriminatory intent by using one set of project evaluation criteria for remote projects that ignores costs of projects, and by using another for the interconnected rural-urban road system where those sets of criteria does consider costs.
Why does your client have standing?
He has standing because he raises both facial and as-applied challenges. He has standing under two lines of standing cases at issue. One is the Jacksonville Grotz line of cases. Jacksonville and Grotz. Injury in fact, for purposes of standing, is met by a barrier to equal treatment, and a plaintiff does not have to show that the particularized individual denial of a benefit. This case is also consistent with Turner and its project.
I'm sorry, you got to tell me a little more about it.
Sure.
I mean, what exactly is his harm?
His harm arises both facially, as I said, and
And as applied as a legal theory.
Okay.
is the kind of challenge you're making. Okay, we're now not there yet. We're asking,
what is the injury?
What is the injury?
Okay.
There's no such thing as applied injury or
okay.
facial injury. Injury is injury. What is the harm, and how will the relief he seeks be ameliorated? Ameliorate the harm.
I think I understand your question, Your Honor.
It's simple English.
Okay. The injury that he suffers from the system in general is that when limited federal highway funds of the Surface Transportation Program that are finite are used in a manner that, as the state says, requires that some of those funds be spent.
Does he have any? I understand your position. It seems to me to be the weaker of your two positions.
Okay.
This one doesn't seem to meet injury in fact requirements. What does he have? A particular project that he wants to have built? Does he have a need for a road that isn't getting built? Does he have any? I mean, that's quite aside
right,
from the question of whether a particular citizen has an interest in having a road built sufficient to have standing. But let's ask the first question. He hasn't alleged anywhere that there is a road that he needs, wants, or has a right to that isn't being built.
In fact, as the record below shows, he did propose an alternative project on the Cook Inlet-Bristol Bay corridor, which was the bridge across the Naknek River, as a much more useful expenditure of federal highway funds. He did that through his participation federal
planning. We're wasting time here. This is obviously not sufficient for standing, because he thinks he can run the government better than somebody else. The fact that he thinks he can run the government better than people who are elected does not give him standing. I think we're wasting time here.
What's the other?
This is what we call taxpayer standing, yeah. And the Supreme Court long ago rejected that unless mm-hmm. it is a religion case.
Okay.
So it's just a waste of time.
Okay.
What is the other basis of standing?
The other is the Iliamna and Dalton project, where...
Why don't you talk English? Just tell me what his injury is. I mean, how is he harmed? How will the lawsuit ameliorate the harm?
Okay. That project was scored under the remote criteria, which ignores costs of the project. That project, if built by bridging the New Halen River, will injure his interests in his property and his use of that property and his use and enjoyment of the public lands of the area.
All right, but his interest there is essentially an environmental. Let's assume that that's a sufficient interest. He owns land, although I gather his land is fairly far from this road. It's like 15 miles or so. Is that right?
It's 10 to 15 miles north, but if you bridge the New Halen River, then you have ATV access and boat access, which you presently don't have because of the downstream poles.
And that bridge is not... There's also the question of what's been built and what hasn't been built. Is the bridge built yet?
No, it is not.
But the road, part of the road's been built.
3 miles was built to specs. above north of the Iliamna Airport. Then about 5 miles was built, was partially built. Some culverts were installed. There was partial bed, grade, etc. The next 6 miles, simply a blade was dropped on a caterpillar, and 6 inches of tundra was peeled to the bridge site where no bridge exists. Then it's an ATV trail to Nundalton.
Okay, so at this point, there's no usable road
that will
get you across the river.
That's correct.
And his problem is that if people can get across the river, they're going to impinge on the pristineness of the area in which he has his house.
Yes,
that's an environmental concern, right, essentially, or an aesthetic concern, or
And it's property concern.
I'm sorry?
And it's property concern.
But they're not impinging directly on his property. It's simply on his use, on his preferred use of the area really around his property, not his property directly. Is that right?
Well, people will be able to come to his property, yes, and use it along the shoreline.
So...
I'm sorry, what does that mean?
He owns property in Lake Clark National Park, on Lake Clark. When you bridge the New Halen River at the south end of the park, then you have access up the west side of Lake Clark.
By ATVs 10 to 15 miles away.
And by boat, yes. ATVs use vast areas of...
How would they use his property?
Sorry?
I heard you say that they're going to use his property. How are they going to use his property?
I didn't say that they will. I will say that they can.
They can't do it now.
It's
more difficult.
Yeah,
it's more difficult
yeah,
now.
You can't get across the New Halen River.
You can come by helicopter. You can come by boat.
You can't come by helicopter for most purposes. People do it because of the state fish and game regulation that prohibits helicopters in that area.
Yeah, but it can be reached by boat now, can it?
There's a falls below the bridge site.
I see. So they could then, if the bridge is built, they could carry the boat and a trailer across the bridge and then put it in below the fall.
That's right. Or above the fall.
Above the fall.
Yeah.
So then the question becomes, what is the connection between this alleged injury and the claimed racial violation, or racial criteria,
right.
Which are not on their face racial criteria anyway. There are criteria about rural as opposed to urban areas.
Remote as opposed
remote.
To
okay.
Rural-urban interconnected, yes.
But since we're just talking standing now, the problem I'm having is really, I guess, best characterized as the zone of interest prudential requirement of standing. Let's assume he has an injury, and let's assume he's better off without the road than with the road.
Mm-hmm.
But the injury, the cause of actions he's pursuing have to do not with whether there's a road going to be built or not a road going to be built directly, but rather whether it's going to be built under X criteria or Y criteria, essentially. Which he's claiming are racially discriminatory, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So, if there is a road, he's going to be able to use the road like anybody else, right? So there's no race discrimination against him in that sense.
Yes, not in the use of the road. Where the race discrimination occurs is criteria are proxies. Remote is a proxy for native in this case. And that's basically what the four documents in the record by ADOT say.
Well, what they actually said was that there's as I understand it, that Title VI has a disparate impact regulation, which is, by the way, not enforceable by private right of action or under 1983.
Right.
So that's another problem I have down the road. I don't see how you have a cause of action here, but we're not there yet.
Okay. They didn't say disparate impact, Your Honor. They said that Title VI and the executive order at issue, Environmental Justice, requires that some federal highway funds be made available for projects that serve minority communities and prohibit the state from denying funds to such projects based on a poor benefit-cost ratio.
Because otherwise there would be a disparate impact. I mean, that's
right.
the context here, yes?
I think it's intentional discrimination when you use a misinterpretation, what Mr. Gillen believes.
But at any rate, again, we're not there yet. We're not up to the question of whether you have a cause of action under Title VI, which... as I understand it, and in a case in which I rigorously dissented, you probably don't. But leaving all that aside for now, What about the question of how these environmental interests connect up, in the zone of interest sense, with the protections accorded by Title VI, which is your primary cause of action, as I understand?
Yes. They connect up, I believe, Your Honor, because transportation planning statutes, the zone of interest of those statutes includes environmental concerns. The statutes, particularly at 23 U.S.C. 133, for example, have a number of environmental types of projects that are authorized, such as wetland restoration banks, etc., that are authorized.
That's not Title VI. That's not what you're suing. Right. You're suing under Title VI. You're not suing under the Federal Transportation Statute.
I understand. But you have the implementation here through the transportation planning requirements of Title 23 of a system of using project evaluation criteria that are based on the state's view of Title VI as requiring, in effect, a reverse discrimination program.
That's only a violation. You can only bring a lawsuit for a violation of Title VI if they're violating your Title VI rights. If they have an erroneous view of Title VI, that's not your problem. Your problem is, are they violating your Title VI rights? No?
Yes, I would agree. And Mr. Gillum's Title VI rights are violated when projects that he would seek and that he is entitled to discovery, I believe, Your Honor, to show that the projects that he would use are go unfunded or delayed.
Is there anything in the complaint that covers that? You told me that there's something in some letter where he's mentioned some project. There's nothing in the complaint that suggests any particular project.
I think that is the case, yeah. There is nothing in the complaint.
Well, I still don't quite get it. I mean, the fact that he has some other project he would prefer the money be used for, how does that connect up with his Title VI injury?
Okay.
I mean, he may not like a road there because he doesn't want people near his house, but what does that have to do with Title VI?
Well, I think the where it has to do with Title VI is that the funds, as I said initially, are finite. You can only spend that. You can't spend a dollar bill twice.
So essentially, your argument has to, if we don't see standing on this question of other funds, you lose.
I don't know what you mean by other funds, Your Honor.
If we don't see you having a sufficient injury in fact from the failure to use funds for something else, then you don't have standing. I mean, that's really what you're saying, because you keep backing into that.
Right, and we did plead in the complaint that ADOT's system, diminishes funds for those.
How do we know that if he succeeds in diverting funds for this project, that it'll go into this other project that your client prefers? Maybe they'll...
Or other projects, yes.
Well, that wouldn't help you, because what you're saying is the injury is that he would rather have this other project. You keep saying that. That's your injury. But, of course, the funding could be abrogated from this project, and they could just send the money back to Washington, or they could decide to use it on project in a different part of Alaska altogether. There's no guarantee that stopping this project will increase funding for your client's preferred project, is it?
I do think that factually, yes, that will occur, because as the deposition of Jeff Otteson shows, two points. One is that there are far more projects than there is money available for projects, and two, Mr. Otteson testified that unless you had this dual system for evaluating remote projects and those on the interconnected system, the remote projects could not compete, his words, in the same pot of funds. Now, Our view is projects should compete on transportation needs, on safety concerns, on commerce, and those sort of things. Sure. I'm sorry.
Did you hear my question?
Perhaps I didn't, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Okay. It's always good to hear the question and try to understand it before trying to give an answer.
Sure.
If this project stops, how do we know that the money will be used for the project your client prefers? First, do you understand the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. What we know is that if we get a system by which all projects are evaluated free of racially motivated criteria, the best projects will rise to the fore free of those criteria. And
so the answer is we don't know.
No, I think we know what Mr. Otteson has said, and that is that...
Well, what you said, he said, is that there are lots of projects and there's not money for all of them. So my question is, assuming that the money is not used on this project, is there any guarantee that the money will actually then be used for this other project your client prefers?
The money is a pool of...
Yes or no question. Can you answer with yes or no? Is there any guarantee that the money will be used for the project your client prefers?
I believe there is a guarantee that more money... There is a likelihood that more money will be used.
Let's try yes or no, okay?
Okay.
Okay, next thing I want coming out of your mouth, this is the only word, yes or no. If the money is diverted from this project, it's not used for this project, is there any guarantee that it will be used for the project that your client prefers? Only two answers, yes... Or no,
because it's subject to a planning process.
Okay. So given that there is no such guarantee, how can you use your client's preference for this other project as a basis for standing?
Because what I believe you're talking about, Your Honor, is redressability. And redressability requires a likelihood that the plaintiff's injury will be redressed.
That's a prior problem, which is that you don't even, as we established earlier, you have not even in the complaint established that there is a project. That he would prefer, or why he prefers it, or how it would benefit to him to have it, or anything that you would need to allege an injury of fact with regard to any particular project. Is that right? There's nothing in the complaint about any of that.
About particular other projects?
Right. Why he wants it, how it interests him not to have it, or anything like that, or how anything that distinguishes him from anybody else with regard to any particular project. Before we ever get to addressability.
Okay. We did identify conservation projects that are under... 23 OC 133 that could be funded. We didn't identify particular projects.
Right.
We identified types of
projects. I mean, if you've seen a complaint in which was passes muster under Lujan in that line of cases, right. You have to say, you know, I live in such and such a place, and I deal with such and such a location, and because of X and Y, it will be helpful to me to have this happen. And you haven't done any of that.
Under the pleading, generalized allegations, as we all know, are sufficient.
But not in terms of an injury in fact, which you just haven't alleged with regard to any. In this context, where you're challenging a broad governmental policy, you have to show how it's going to affect you.
I think we have to allege, not show. We should. That's a burden of proof. That's a proof of trial burden. And the case law, I believe, is clear that you have to allege injury in fact.
But not just by saying I've had an injury in fact. You have to say, give some facts that show that if it's proven, would demonstrate that you do. You have, with regard to this question of other funds, you just haven't done that.
I think we understand your position. You far exceed your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please the Court. My name is Larry McKinstry. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I represent Michael Barton, the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation.
How are you, Mr. McKinstry?
I'm sorry?
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Is there anything you've heard this morning that you think isn't adequately answered in your brief?
Not at all, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Case aside, you will stand submitted. Well, next, your argument in the Alaska Constitutional Legal Defense and Conservation Fund versus Newark.
I'm not sure. Did she resign? I think she did.
Absolutely.
Is it still Norton?